Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to That 590 Show. Just so everybody knows, we will be off every Wednesday going forward, so the show will be on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, and there will be that hole right in the middle that will be filled by Andy Strickland. So we're back better than ever, to quote Mike Greenberg. Hope everybody had a fantastic Thursday. I'm your host, Matt Berger. Matt Rocchio is the producer. He stepped out for a bit, but he'll be back. John G. Mighty Rudolph behind the dials. The Bellman Automotive phone line is available at 855-282-8255. The text line, 855-282-8255. And you can add us on Twitter at 590show, at Matt_Berger, at Rock590, and at JohnRudolph22. We are very happy, though, to have in studio with us J.J. Bailey, the lead baseball writer for KMOV.com. You can follow him on Twitter at the J.J. Bailey. J.J., it's nice to finally meet you.
Hey, great. I'm sorry I disappoint you. I mean, I know how I look in person.
I was really expecting kind of like a Channing Tatum kind of look-alike to walk in, but yeah, you're far from it, sir.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, so I nailed it. Yeah, like Channing Tatum at age 50 after he's retired.
Yeah, after he had a horrible cocaine and drinking addiction, that's exactly how you would look.
Yeah, that's how I consider myself, is a Channing Tatum that just drinks and eats a lot and sleeps on his face.
If Nick Nolte and Channing Tatum were to have some kind of baby, they would produce J.J. Bailey.
Yeah, I am, and I look like Nick, so...
Joining us at 6:40 will be Sean Rourke for the editorial director of NHL.com. And then at 7 o'clock, our friend Andrew Claudio, the digital media director for Gotham SN and host of the Nothing But Knicks podcast. All guests appear courtesy of Bellman Automotive, BellmanCDJR.com. We will get into the baseball over the past couple days, but first, you heard the song in the opener. It was Rusty Cage by Soundgarden. Got up at 5 o'clock this morning. Check Twitter, and I'm seeing all these RIPs, Chris Cornell, and I'm like, no. Go to Google, type it, and I'm like, yep, unfortunately, it's true. He is my all-time favorite singer, my all-time favorite songwriter. Soundgarden is one of my all-time favorite bands. I am a Gen Xer, so I grew up on the whole grunge thing. Like, this is the soundtrack of my life, and we are a couple days away from... A friend of mine that I grew up with, you know, in high school, went to high school with, we're a couple years away from the anniversary of his passing from cancer. And the album Temple of the Dog, which is essentially a Chris Cornell album. It was Chris Cornell and a bunch of guys from Pearl Jam. That album got me through a lot of tough times when my friend passed away. And when I saw the news this morning, I felt like someone kicked me right in the stomach. And to hear that he took his own life, makes it even more tragic. And then I found out that the last song that they played, they did a show in Detroit last night. So he did the show and then went to the hotel room and hung himself. And the last song they played was In My Time of Dying, which is a Led Zeppelin song. And like the last lyric of that song, I'm paraphrasing it, is In My Time of Dying, I do not want my family and friends to mourn. Just carry my body home.
Yeah.
And that would, could you imagine though, knowing that you're more than likely going to do this as soon as you get back to the hotel room, you're on stage in front of like 10,000 people, and the last words that you sing are those lyrics? If you knew that you were going to do that, that is unbelievable. And I got chills just talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, So, you know, that's a choice, a tough choice to make, certainly, but that's certainly something that obviously, like, if he was going to choose how he went out, he picked perhaps the most, you know, the most beautiful send-off that he could, and obviously the way he touched people the most was his music, his lyrics, and, you know, he's one of the great voices in rock history, and, you know, for, you know, knowing that there's, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people out there like yourself that music really resonated with, kind of knowing what you know now, it's sort of a salute to people like you in a way that just says, you know, this is what I'm going to leave you with.
I was telling people today, I feel like I found out that someone I went to high school with passed away. That's what I felt like when I found the news. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And like, I mean, obviously I've never met the guy. Now I have talked to people like Tom West, who works over at the Viper, who I worked with at Talk STL and, you know, was on the point for a long time. And Tom West is like, no, he was a great guy. He's like, when he came in to interview, when we interviewed him, he was awesome. He's like, in fact, he was hysterical, which is what a lot of people have always said about Chris Cornell, how uncharacteristically funny he is. You would think that someone who wrote Outshined and came from Seattle and always looked like he was, you know, the textbook definition of depression, you would not expect him to be as funny as he was, and he was hysterical.
Well, and especially the impact he had on music in an era where, you know, it shocked me. It's far more shocking when someone has never heard of Chris Cornell than if someone has, obviously.
Sure.
And for somebody who had that much impact and whose voice is generally the memory that resonates from an era in someone's life, to be friendly and humble and open and warm, you know, that's rare too. In addition to not only coming from Seattle and the scene that he came from, that depression fueled a lot of that songwriting, that he was this successful and this impactful and still never seemed to really lose touch with not only his audience,
absolutely,
but his fans and the industry in general. He still made impacts.
Soundgarden was supposed to play Point Fest this Saturday. Yep. They have canceled it. I did not have tickets to the show, but I did think about just getting tickets and going, because I have seen Chris Cornell live 3 times, but I never saw Soundgarden.
Right.
I saw Audioslave twice, and I saw him solo once, and blew me away on how good he was live, because he did have some throat problems before in the 90s. He had some kind of surgery on his vocal cords, because there were some times in the 90s with Soundgarden where I heard him live and he sounded awful. Yeah. And I'm like, wow. And then when I saw them, when it was Audioslave at the Pageant, this was back in 2002, I believe. It was like in February. It was like the Point's 10-year anniversary show, or I forgot what it was. The Point was having some kind of like year-long celebration. The concert sold out like in 2 minutes, and the Pageant was packed. And then he got on stage, and he hit every single note. And he is still probably the most amazing musician, vocalist I've ever seen live.
Yeah, and the power, like the power in his voice,
absolutely,
is, you know, in a lot of ways unrivaled. I mean, just the ability to, I mean, completely fill a space with not only just, I mean, the melody of what he sings, but just the force behind it.
Yes.
It was like a gale force wind whenever he went to the microphone.
The way that he sang, he had like a 4-octave range, and he knew like when to be forceful with his voice, like you just said, and when to kind of like back away. And some of the covers that he did, his cover of Thank You is far superior than the Led Zeppelin cover. His cover of Thank You was amazing. And someone found on YouTube today, and they sent it to me, and he sent me, this was a friend of mine from high school, and I knew that he was going to be tore up about it too. And he sent me a text with a video of him, of Chris Cornell and his daughter singing a Redemption song at the Beacon Theater in New York. I guess it was like last year before. And yeah, he was like, don't watch this in front of other people, dude. He's like, if you're going to be like me and start bawling, he's like, don't watch this in front of other people. I'm like, no, I'll probably wait until I get home to watch it. But rest in peace, Chris Cornell. I wish that things turned out differently, but I mean, some people just can't escape their demons, and it's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. And at least, you know, in a situation like this, especially the way that, you know, his last show, one of those things someone once told me, you know, sometimes all you can do is just kind of tip a beer and say thanks. And, you know, for fans of Chris Cornell, certainly there's a lot to be thankful for, even if
absolutely
the end was tragic.
Yeah. I know a lot of people were going to be streaming like Soundgarden and Audioslave all day today. Unless I heard it on the radio, I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for it yet. So,
yeah, there were actually, interestingly enough, there were a couple of MLB teams that when they put out their game notes, all the little section headers were different lyrics from throughout
were
his
they?
Career. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he wrote lyrics that were amazing. I mean, he wrote songs that, like, I would sit there and I would read the lyrics, and I'm like, I wish I could write something this poetic. I mean, he really knew how to touch people. I mean, like I said, and he helped me get through my friend's death a couple years ago with the Temple of the Dog album. So enough of that depressing stuff. Let's move on to something a little more cheerful. Even though they lost the 2 games against the Boston Red Sox, they didn't, you know, get whooped, I guess you could say. The moral victories, maybe. They were in the game last night, went 13 innings. The game before that, I mean, it was kind of a back and forth. Eventually, unfortunately, someone has to lose. But you do have to like the way that this Cardinals team has turned around since that 3-9 start. I wasn't sure if they showed us anything, that 6-game sweep against the Braves and the Marlins, but they win the series, the weekend series against the Cubs. They look pretty good against the Red Sox, and now they start a weekend series against the San Francisco Giants, who are having a disappointing year so far.
Yeah, and that game last night against the Red Sox, I mean, you know, it goes 13 innings, but for the majority of regulation, the Cardinals were completely in control of that game. I mean, you see it's kind of bleed away there at the end, but that 4-0 lead, it's, you know, and this is somewhat kind of, I guess, esoteric, but when you have a 4-0 lead in 2016, you're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
You are.
And this season in that game, you could tell most people kind of put it on autopilot because, you know, this team has appeared competent and consistent enough to kind of ride one of those leads to a win. It didn't work out that way, but what you've seen is this team doesn't appear out of their depth no matter who they're playing. San Francisco comes at a pretty good time, especially when Madison Bumgarner is still down from the dirt bike in, you know, injury.
Yeah.
And you got arrested Michael Walker ready to go. You have a rotation that's pitching very well. You know, bullpen's shown you some problems a little bit in the last few days, but for
Rosenthal last night, he had been good, but last night.
And there were some, you know, there's an argument to be made that the home plate umpire didn't help the cause much either. Not you know, it was bad on both sides, but you can certainly go back to a couple of those calls that may have turned the game or turned the momentum there. So, but you're getting an offense that's producing. You're getting guys like Colton Wong, who you need to be getting on base, who needs to be getting hits. He's getting hits. You have guys like Mag Sierra and Tommy Pham causing problems the way they need to cause problems. And so they're heading into this weekend series they just dropped to, but for all intents and purposes, this team looks to be on a roll.
Absolutely. And the last two games kind of indicated like what they were last year in interleague play at home. Last year, interleague play at home, they only won one game. So this year, it looks like they're having their struggles again against interleague play at Busch Stadium, which doesn't make any sense. But sometimes that's the beauty of baseball. Sometimes you have stats, sometimes you have things that make absolutely no sense. You brought up Mag Sierra. He has been fantastic. He's been a lot of fun to watch.
Certainly.
And he's making such a strong argument for, you know what, I need to stay up here with the big league club. I'm not sure what they're going to do, though, when Piscotty comes back. Mm-hmm. Because who do you send down? Because Tommy Pham's been raking, too.
Yep.
And you signed Dexter Fowler to that big contract. You're going to play him. I think the odd man out on this is Randall Grichuk. Grichuk's, I mean, I understand they had big ideas for him going into the season that he was going to be the everyday left fielder. Even though I said that he was going to be losing playing time, I thought it was going to be to Jose Martinez, not Mag Sierra. But regardless, I think that if someone gets sent down, I got a feeling it may be Randall Grichuk. He may be the odd man out.
And there's, if you're looking at it constant or current performance, I think I agree with you. I think that, I mean, certainly Mag Sierra is on the verge of, well, either earning or tying the franchise record for most hits to start a career. He's got 7 straight games now, and ESPN and the Cardinals kind of disagree on that total.
They do.
Cardinals say he's tied. Homer Smoot, you know, he's 1902. ESPN says he's the franchise record holder.
The family of Homer Smoot.
Yes, hammering Homer the Stallion Smoot. We all know Homer Smoot.
Yeah, everybody. I mean, you go to Busch Stadium, you can't see anybody without a Homer Smoot jersey.
Yes, on. Homer Smoot's debut, by the way, predates the airplane, the theory of relativity, and the invention of cornflakes. So that tells you how long ago that is. So record keeping might be a little dicey on that.
Might be, yes.
But the one argument in Randall Grichuk's favor is John Mozeliak looks for, you know, benefit, right? So who benefits more by going down? You know that Randall Grichuk gets very little by going to AAA at this point. He goes down there and becomes Barry Bonds. He just mashes that, and that does help, and it can maybe help your confidence and get you back up. But there's very little benefit for Randall Grichuk in AAA, whereas Mag Sierra can still get a lot of benefit by being sent back down to the minors. Maybe it's to AA. Maybe he just goes down to AAA. You know, maybe he's earned that, you know, that kind of promotion in demotion. But I think if the Cardinals are weighing it and they look at who's this going to benefit more if I send them down, Randall Grichuk still offers a little bit more offensively than Sierra does, certainly because he has the power. And Sierra's going to be a singles hitter. He's, you know, I mean, that's just kind of who he is. And, you know, that power might come a little bit later as his body fills out. But for right now, he's a slap singles hitter. So Randall Grichuk can still do more damage cumulatively in favor of the offense. And Mag Sierra can still get something out of when he goes back down, whereas Randall Grichuk might not. And I think that might be some of the metrics that Mozeliak weighs when he's trying to make this decision.
I agree with everything you just said. However, if you keep Randall Grichuk up here and he continues to struggle, and then let's say Mag Sierra, let's say he does go to Memphis and he tears it up, then it's going to be like, yeah, you know, we kind of sent the wrong guy down.
Yeah, and I think that that's very possible. That could happen, and in a month or less, you see a reverse course and you swap them. But I also think that they're gonna kind of operate on the prove it model. That Mag Sierra proved that you need to that these 7 games weren't an anomaly. Prove you're ready for major league play. And Randall Grichuk, prove that you're going to struggle this much at the plate. Because these guys, you know, Wong and Grichuk and Adams are guys that have gone through tough stretches and been demoted. And they haven't been able to swing themselves out of it. They don't get really protracted runs. So I think they're probably going to operate that way, that, you know, Sierra needs to prove that he's ready for everyday MLB play, and Grichuk needs to prove that he's not right now. And until that time, they're going to go with what on paper to them is going to make the most sense, which is keep developing Sierra and give Grichuk a chance to do some damage for the big club.
When you saw the way, even though it was an extraordinarily small sample size, but you saw the way Jose Martinez hit.
Yeah.
Fielding, he was a little shaky.
Yes.
But he hit well.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see Max Sierra, who's a great hitter, and he's a pretty good fielder as well, too.
Yeah, like
you
the said, fastest guy, press, fastest guy there in the system.
Yeah, no power, but everything else that you want in a Major League Baseball player, Max Sierra has. I'm wondering who's the trade bait, because you know the Cardinals are going to probably need to make a move, more than likely for middle relief, because that seems like what the Cardinals do every single year. I always say it. They're going to trade some minor leaguer you never heard of or some middle reliever that you never heard of.
Yep.
So that's what they're going to end up doing again this year, more than likely. But let's say they want to make a bigger splash. Let's say they're hearing there's somebody out there. Maybe it's they think it's someone who could be an everyday third baseman or everyday first baseman, something along those lines. Who do you think makes the most sense as trade bait goes? Is it Grichuk? Is it Harrison Bader? Is it Jose Martinez? I would say probably not, considering his age. It's probably going to be Max Sierra.
Yeah, it would be, but that's also, I think, what's going to keep the Cardinals from floating him out there, just because of his age, because of what he's shown, not only in the minors and in spring this year, but now what he's done in the major league level. You know, obviously, if the Cardinals had their way, Jose Martinez would be the piece you'd move, because he's older. You know he's a bona fide hitter. He's won a batting title in the minors before, and he can hit at the major league level. But he's a 28, 29-year-old journeyman that's not going to draw a lot of offers. You know, I think Randall Grichuk would still have quite a bit of value.
I do, too.
The problem is the Cardinals asked for Grichuk in that trade. That was part of the piece that they really, really wanted, was Grichuk, not so much Borges, because they thought there was a lot of potential. If they float him out on the trade block, it's kind of a signal that, like, maybe their evaluation was flawed or inaccurate, and teams are going to read into that maybe the Cardinals don't believe he has the ceiling that he once did. And so I think part of that's going to be a problem. I still think Matt Adams is a potential trade asset.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying, like, they could, like, this one player is going to be traded for one other player.
Oh, right.
It's all going to be a package.
Yeah, and I think Matt Adams could be a significant part of that package. Now, there were discussions in the offseason that he was floated out there and there wasn't a ton of interest, but we've seen him lose the weight. We've seen him demonstrate a better swing, a more complete swing, power to the opposite field with consistency, and he's a guy that just doesn't have a place to play right now on this team. But there are franchises out there looking for left-handed hitters who can jump a wall and can play pretty good defense, and Matt Adams can do that.
Yes, absolutely.
At first base, he can play pretty good defense.
You're right. He's an above-average fielder at first base, I believe. And if you're Matt Adams, you almost want to get traded, too. It's not like he hates the organization or that he hates, you know, the city or anything like that. He's a baseball player, and he wants to play baseball.
Yeah, he's watching the days go by on the calendar.
Absolutely.
He's just getting older.
You're just getting older, and you got to be getting bored, too. I understand you got to keep your head in the game, but if you're sitting there night in and night out to put the uniform on just to sit there and watch, when knowing that you could be out there. And another thing, too, if you see someone out there making an error, you can be like, I could have done that. I could have made that play. Why am I not out there? That's just human nature to be like that.
Well, and when your at-bats are, you know, off the bench, pinch-hitting at-bats, you look at, you know, great hitters will fail, you know, 7 out of 10 times. And if you're getting one at-bat every 3 days, that's a really tight window in which to prove your worth.
Absolutely.
And that can wear on you as well.
Absolutely. J.J. Bailey, the lead baseball writer for KMOV.com. You can follow him on Twitter at the J.J. Bailey. He's going to be sitting in with us for the entire 2 hours. The Bellman Automotive phone line is available at 855-282-8255, and the text line as well at 855-282-8255. But for the first time tonight, let's head to that 590 Show Sports Update desk on our very own Matt Rocchio.
Cardinals are off tonight. They will take start a three-game series tomorrow night against the San Francisco Giants. Michael Wacha will face off against the lefty Matt Moore in Game 1. Game 2, it'll be Carlos Martinez facing off against the righty Jeff Samardzija. And in Game 3, it's the veterans Adam Wainwright taking on the righty Matt Cain. In action later on tonight, it's the Ducks and the Predators. Game 4 of the Western Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Predators leading that series 3-1. The Rockies and the Twins are underway again for the second time today. They are in the bottom of the first, no score. Rockies beat the Twins earlier today 5-1 in the first game of that doubleheader. And also today, the Braves placed Freddie Freeman, who is tied for the Major League lead in home runs with 14, on the 10-day DL after a left wrist fracture. Reports are that he'll be out for up to 10 weeks' time. I'm Matt Arracchio with your 590 Sports Report.
What a crazy scene that was in Atlanta last night with Jose Bautista and the bat flipping. Every single time, I mean, like, you have to expect that guy's going to flip the bat.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He hits a home run, he's going to flip the bat. So I don't understand why people get upset about it. He's going to flip it. Just don't let him hit a home run. He's not very good now anyway.
Yeah. And that's a guy who's – that's now, like, his signature moment in his major league career was one of the most titanic bat flips.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah. Jordan's going to dunk, but he's just going to flip bats. Let him do it.
That's the best way to put it. Let's take a commercial break. More fun with our friend J.J. Bailey right here on that 590 show. 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.